Good morning. This meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order. The time is 11:17 on Tuesday, February 25th. Members present are Representative Tarr, Representative Vance, Representative Newman, and myself, Chair Stutz. As usual, I'm going to ask you to kindly silence your phones and ask you not to approach the table, the committee table, if you would like to get a message to any one of the members here. If you'd get a hold of my committee aide, Matt Greening, he'd be more than happy to help you. I'd like to thank Jordan May, our committee secretary, and Brett Mello from the Juno LIO for technical teleconferencing support. We do have a quorum, and we have several agenda items up today. I'm not sure if we're going to get to them all or not, but we're going to give it our best effort. First up, we have House Bill 199, Fisheries Rehabilitation Permits, by Representative Tallarico. The chair's intent is to hold public testimony, consider amendments, and move the bill from committee today. We received one amendment from Representative Vance's office. But before we start into public testimony, are there any opening comments from the bill's sponsor? Okay. All right. With that, brief at ease. Thank you. And with that, I will open up public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on House Bill 199? Come up, identify yourself and your affiliation.
My name is Milo Atkinson. I'm testifying for myself. I've got a doctorate in fisheries. I've probably about 30 years of research and teaching on salmon biology and management. Wanted to testify in opposition to at least this particular version of the bill. When salmon stocks go through a downturn because of poor climatic conditions, a very effective strategy to rehabilitate them is to maintain their habitat, maintain the escapements, and be patient. It worked in Bristol Bay, where I'm from. We went from 2.5 million sockeye salmon in the early 70s to routinely getting 40 to 60 million fish a year now. There was no enhancement involved in that. And there are other parts of the state where the same thing has happened. But when these downturns last for a long period, people get frustrated and they want to make fish. And on the surface, that seems like a good idea. We're successful at making fish. We have some technologies that work, but the risks to wild stocks are significant and are not appreciated by all people. Dan Dunaway has given you some written testimony that talks about the risks if enhancement is done poorly. I want to talk about risks that the wild stocks face if your enhancement program is successful and you do produce a lot of fish. And a lot of it has to do with local adaptations. Salmon are notorious for being adapted to the particular habitat that they spawn in. In Iliamna Lake, you've got fish spawning in big rivers, small rivers, cold rivers, in the lake, on islands in the lake, even in ponds that have upwelling. And these fish have different genetics, they have different morphologies, they have different spawning timing. And if you put another fish from a different stock in there, they would not do as well. Now, this gets particularly troubling when you start talking about some of the rivers that people are concerned about, where we have low Chinook productivity, like the Yukon, the Kuskokwim, the Susitna. And the reason that it's particularly difficult there is you've got all of these different stocks all mixed together at the mouth of the river or the inlets where the fisheries occur. So if you've got all of these stocks in a poor productivity period and they're not capable of sustaining a harvest, if you enhance one stock and try to fish on that stock, you're going to catch the stocks you didn't enhance and you're going to drive them down. You may miss this because strays from this enhanced stock might bump up the escapement numbers and the other stocks. And definitely the strays in those depleted stocks that aren't enhanced are going to have an effect on the fitness of those stocks that you've driven down. So in some, when you know, rivers are particularly problematic places to do enhancement. If you're going to do an enhancement project, it needs to be carefully evaluated. You need to look at substock structure. You need to look at the mixture in the fisheries, a lot of other things that you need to consider. And they have to be carefully evaluated. And when I looked at this bill, I didn't, you know, there's some language in there about the commissioner's going to evaluate this, that, and the other and only permit the project if it's going to be beneficial, but there was not enough time and no resources given to the commissioner to accomplish that. So I noticed that Representative Vance had introduced an amendment. I understand that there may be some more amendments coming through. I think this bill needs to, at the minimum, be significantly modified to allow more careful evaluation of projects before they're permitted. That's my testimony.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your letter and just studying some of the comments here and then you're listening to your comments. So the amendment, I think, addresses in some ways a concern you just mentioned if that amendment were to be adopted, because it doesn't just default to issuing the permit. And so it doesn't, though, however, remove the language that has the time limit in it. So I think it still says the commissioner may reject an application that is not completed within 30 days after the commissioner notifies the applicant, within 90 days after the commissioner notifies an application and application is complete, they shall approve or reject. So it still leaves the 90 days in there, and so it sounds like your concern is that that's not sufficient time. And I don't know if that's from the work that you've done, and in your work as a fisheries biologist, have you evaluated other types of applications? Do you have a timeline you think would be more appropriate? Because I don't want it to feel like just an arbitrary number, because 120 days is better than 90, right? You know, there needs to be something a little more solid for that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I have a couple, and probably talking to the Fish and Game commissioners would be the best bet for that. But my understanding is of their staffing levels is that, you know, they're short-staffed. It's hard for them to put enough manpower on projects like this. The big concern is if they need to go out into the field and do some evaluations, gather some new data, then 90 days is not long enough.
Mm-hmm. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had some of the same concerns that you have about the genetics. And so in this bill, one of the things that's been said that to sort of reassure us of those concerns or address those is the page 4, lines 8 through 10 here, the shall require a permittee under this section to collect not more than 500,000 eggs for fertilization under a single permit. And it sounded like what others were saying is that number was so low that it minimizes some of the, you know, possibility for negative impact. And I wondered if you could speak to that.
Well, very, very definitely, the larger the enhancement project gets, when you get a very, very large enhancement project, even small problems like small rates of straying become big problems. So very definitely putting limits on that will be helpful. You know, it depends on the particular situation, but limits would be helpful.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Doctor. I appreciate listening and talking to you. I've visited in the past. Some of the first comments that you made, and this is in respect to the bill and as a whole, was the problems that we have with our fisheries that may need an enhancement is habitat and escapement. You went on to talk about how the difficulty arises with, particularly with mixed stock fisheries, where you have, like Susitna, where you have 8 of 16 or 8 of 12 stocks of concerns with tributaries. Obviously, they have some reason that they may need enhancement or not. I can see where there could be a problem if there was an over-enhancement into a stream, into a mixed stock fisheries. You send the fisheries in there to get that additional stock that's been laid in there that happens to be doing well because of what you had mentioned, different ecosystems that they survive in and such. But my question is, if there's a problem with escapement, and just not enough escapement, but the habitat is a viable habitat for smolt to survive in, that are predominantly nurtured in those streams, like a coho or a chinook. So if you were putting those same types of fishes back in, if there wasn't a problem with habitat, it was basically an escapement thing. You didn't get enough escapement. What would be the problem with artificial enhancement at those times if you also had a plan in place that had basically what I just wrote down here in my notes, escapement from the escapement plan? Because this enhancement plan is there to supplement until there's not a problem, I would assume. So what if you were there to do, so you did that, because you missed one fisheries with an escapement like that, you're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the road is your problem. And so being able to have the management tool in your pocket, why would that be a negative?
Yeah, so the use of hatcheries to restore populations that are in deep trouble is common and effective, particularly in the lower 48. I get a lot more concerned about it when you're trying to do it to maintain a pretty robust fishery. And in combination with fishing, enhancing some components of the stock can be particularly troublesome. I'll also mention the issue of domestication selection, which is the tendency of the fish to, for their characteristics, to adapt to be more suited for the hatchery than for the wild. Things like losing their predator avoidance, things like learning to surface feed, and then just the relaxation. The females no longer have to pick a good nest site, and so they may lose the characteristics that required them to produce, robust eggs and select the right sort of habitat. In the lower 48, the conservation hatcheries I've seen, I know one for Sacramento River winter chinook, their goal is to not have more than 10% of the population on the spawning ground come from the hatchery. They do it very carefully and at a modest level.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. I'm just going to go back in the ability. You'd mentioned that when you're artificially enhancing, that you could affect the ability of the nurturing ability of that smolt to learn how to feed and survive and instincts like that. I didn't realize that fish had the ability to train to nurture like a mother dog does to a puppy and stuff like that. I didn't think they had that type of physiology in their life. So I think that's very interesting to thought. Secondly, again, I go back to the ability, and you mentioned the ability of pulsing and only 10%, and quite frankly, why the commercial fleet is so important is when you have these masses of fish going into these tributaries, this is what I've learned, is they pulse them in there, so you don't have your minimum escapement going in on one pulse, then you wouldn't have your mix-up for your genetics. And so by doing that through the whole season, you're pulsing that through, getting a mixture of your good genetics and stock in there. So if you're able to do that with your stocks that are your nurturally native stocks, and you're pulling your stock, your egg stock from them, your raw stock, nurturing them artificially in enhancement, if there's the habitat available, do you see where I'm going? If you could maybe shed some light on that. And then I'll ask you privately.
Chair, Representative Newman.
Thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair.
And that's very important. The ability to differentially harvest the enhanced stock is critical. And that is why our existing hatcheries have been, you know, there's a policy to situate them in areas where there's a minimum interaction with wild stocks. And that gets really difficult when you start talking about enhancement on a river system where the fish are going through a gauntlet and they're just naturally mixed. So I'm much more concerned about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And like I said, I'll follow up with the doctor later.
Perfect. Thank you. And thank you for your testimony. If no other questions?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next, we have Emily Anderson. Morning, Emily.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Emily Anderson. I am the Alaska Director for the Wild Salmon Center. I'm also an attorney, and I specialize in natural resource law. I'm testifying today in opposition to HB 199. While I appreciate the sponsor's desire to boost fish populations in areas where numbers are down, fishery enhancement in this context is simply not the way to do it. While it's not perfect, Alaska's current fish enhancement and hatchery development policy seeks to segregate wild fish from hatchery fish to avoid interbreeding, competition, and harvest management problems. Although HB 199 requires the commissioner, when issuing a permit, to determine that a project will not harm indigenous fish populations, there is no requirement to segregate the hatchery fish from the wild fish stocks. So HB 199, in my view, does not contain adequate safeguards to protect wild stocks. Alaska's policy up to this point has avoided many of the pitfalls that hatchery schemes in the lower 48 have experienced. In the Pacific Northwest, hatchery production is used to enhance salmon runs that have been devastated by habitat destruction, dams, overharvest, you know, you name it. Rather than supporting wild salmon recovery, a lot of those hatchery schemes, though, are developed to mitigate damage to fisheries, have only continued to drive those depleted wild salmon stocks down. HB 199 departs from Alaska's current policy and sets up a scheme that mirrors that approach taken in the lower 48, which I think is troubling. In fact, HB 199 specifically targets weak stock fisheries. Decades of scientific research indicate that fish enhancement projects that seek to restore depleted stocks only really mask the problem and make it much more difficult to recover those wild stocks. So in short, hatchery enhancement projects that seek to recover weak stocks may appear to be a good tool for increasing fish numbers, but over a relatively short period of time, they actually decrease the productivity of those salmon stocks, thereby decreasing the ability of those wild populations to rebound. To truly protect weak stocks and help them rebound, as Mr. Atkinson said, we need to focus our efforts on habitat rehabilitation and really try to resist the temptation to fix the problem by increasing numbers through enhancement. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Do we have questions?
Just briefly, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Emily, and I'm glad to see you again. Got to work with you on a lot of projects.
Absolutely.
A lot of hours with Emily. She's a smart lady. I was interested that you had said that you'd stated that with the current system of the hatchery systems that we have now, which are basically in mass hatchery, large escapements out into the ocean, banks and such, that you felt that was a better system than targeted nurturing and streams that were needed. Basically, I think what you said. And so I was wondering what your reasoning would be in that based on this. When we look at the total amount of biomass that's available to feed these fish, no matter where they're coming from. So now you're letting millions of fish escape out into the ocean, into the total ecosystem, just in mass, as opposed to targeting natal streams that you could be taking the spawn from. Those fish that are pulsing at different times, put them in a box, put them back in there, addressing those specific streams that need to be fixed, that won't be competing in mass by millions because you're targeting, you're using a sniper rifle instead of a shotgun. And I wonder why that theory of management, why you would say that that's better.
Sure. Thanks for the question. I think when I'm referring to kind of our current policy, I'm picking out a very specific part of that current policy, which is the idea that we need to try to segregate the hatchery runs from the wild stocks as much as possible. And I think that that's, I know it's not a perfect system, but I think the law was designed, I'm speaking just purely from a lawyer's point of view and thinking about how the law was originally designed. When it was originally enacted, it was designed to try to prevent some of the problems that we are already started to see in the lower 48 with interbreeding and mixing of hatchery stocks with wild stocks. And most of that interbreeding was really focused, and Mr. Atkinson can probably answer this question a little better than I can, but really focused on, you know, targeting these weak stocks. And that's really what I'm getting at, is that when you put increased pressure from enhancement projects on top of weak stocks, you have a whole bunch of other problems that come with it. Increased predation, because there's no more fish on the grounds. You have interbreeding. You have inbreeding problems sometimes. You know, all of those things put additional pressure on these wild stocks to actually recover from, you know, from low numbers.
I think I understand this general discussion. I think just little feedback is this. I would more see it as, instead of like of an en masse, you mentioned some of the problems, particularly with mixed stock fisheries and trying to consolidate them, as being able to target fisheries that are really needed, as opposed to putting all those fish in there to compete against all the fisheries and everything that has to compete against food in the ecosystem. So very interesting discussion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do we have other questions? Seeing none. Thank you. Ms. Anderson. Do we have anyone else in the room that would like to testify on this? Mr. Fields.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I didn't intend to testify, but I had read the bill and then I heard the opposition to it. I'm strongly in favor of this bill. I think we're confusing a whole host of issues in the testimony and opposition. We're painting with a broad brush to say this is what they did in the lower 48. I think we all know that fisheries enhancement throughout the world, but specifically in the lower 48, has many iterations and both failures and successes. And this is simply, I mean, we think about this in terms of education. This is sort of like early childhood education. Yeah, you grab these fish, you enhance the environment that they're raised in, you increase the probability of success, and you put them back in the stream. This is really simple. There's not a genetic issue here. And much of what I've heard is the kind of testimony that we hear relative to Alaska Hatcheries Program generally. I think those concerns and issues can be addressed in the context of the larger hatchery program. But these aren't the issues associated with this bill as I read it, Madam Chair and committee members. And so I'm testifying to in favor of this bill and to hone down the issues that the committee needs to focus on relative to the legislation before you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Fields. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify? Mr. Raybung, or should I say Deputy Commissioner Raybung? Directors. There we go. That's, yes, I get you. Director Raybung, excuse me.
For the record, my name is Sam Raybung. I'm the Director of Commercial Fisheries Division, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I just wanted to speak up since listening to the previous discussion. I think it's important to note that this bill is related to restoration, which is a defined term. We talked a lot about it, or heard a lot about enhancement. That's a different animal. Enhancement means you're increasing productivity above what the natural environment can produce, and doing that in basically in perpetuity. If you stop doing it, then it drops back down to what it was before. Restoration is taking a depleted stock and restoring it to its natural level of productivity and then walking away, and it's become self-sustaining after that. So we view them very differently in the department when we do this permitting. This bill would authorize small-scale restoration work, which is short-term. And quite frankly, there's nothing in the bill right now that we couldn't already permit right now through our existing permit structures, primarily the aquatic resource permit, which is a research and education permit. And I'll give some examples of how this would work. And these are real-world examples. The Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation, out of Norton Sound, Nome primarily, there are many streams in that area that have had salmon runs extirpated because of placer mining. And so what they have done now is gone back in, reconditioned the gravel, and then taking broodstock from the main stem and incubating eggs and planting the eggs in that reconditioned gravel in the tributaries have restored runs small scale. It's been fairly successful with coho stocks in Nome. That's one example. The Chickaloon tribe that you alluded to, they've done restoration work on Moose Creek. They took broodstock from the Mananuska River, incubated the eggs, put them back into Moose Creek. I don't believe that has produced returns, but they tried. So, and one more example on Kodiak, the Sunyak tribe, they removed some culverts at the Buskin River drainages that had prevented coho from getting up into the spawning areas. They removed the culverts, reconditioned the area, and then they planted eggs from Buskin stock up there, and now the fish return to those areas to spawn. So it's kind of a do it and be done type project. So that's in effect what we view these projects as, that this bill would allow. And that's really all I had to say. There's a big difference between enhancement and these type of projects. So, thank you.
Thank you. Director, do we have questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you. Welcome, Director. Great great biology. My question goes back into, again, restoration instead of enhanced. And I think what, again, what this bill is, what it would do, and just to his prior questioning, is, again, the commercial industry does a good job of pulsing those different fishes into, say, Willow Creek. I'm just going to pick Sunshine Creek. It doesn't matter. For species, so if they're taking the eggs and spawn from those fish coming in of that natal stream, nurturing them, and putting back, and my thought is what we see, whether it's beaver or different habitat areas, is that Alexander Creek, the whole creek is not bad. Areas are. And so when you're measuring out-migrating stock, I'm assuming that would be an assessment of that whole creek, of how much it should be able to sustain and how much it should be able to produce as far as out-migrating stock. But if there's areas that are damaged because of beavers or man-made or something like that, that don't produce that, would it assist or hurt that tributary to enhance it if it had the capacity in its habitat to hold it? That was artificially declined because of artificial or man-made or natural occurrences. Does that make sense?
Through the chair, I think what's important is that the problem be fixed,
yeah,
so that when you do the restoration work with planting some eggs up there or planting some fry up there, that it works. If you don't fix the problem, then you're going to have to continue to release fry up there. Then it becomes basically a replacement type project. So for a restoration project to work, you have to address what the cause of the decline was first, and then give the fish a jump start back into restoring their natural productivity in that area, and then get out of their way.
One direct follow-up.
Certainly.
So, Director, in the salmon management plan, Alaska State Salmon Management Plan, is there a plan, a part of that plan, that allows you as a director, if you had a tributary that was eminent, that it would be void of a certain species of salmon that it used to carry? So for whatever reason, that population is going to die off. Is there currently a plan in the department, in the Salmon Enhancement Plan, that addresses that?
Through the chair, no. To my knowledge, there's not a specific plan for anything like that in any one place. We have salmon fishery enhancement plans throughout the state on a regional level that are developed by regional planning teams that could address those things, I suppose, but I can't think of an example of that.
I want to bring that up, Madam Chair, because there's optimal and optimum in the management plan. Optimum is the minimum amount of escapement. Optimal would be addressed if a tributary was to come. That is, actually, the definition is optimal, but there's no definition for it. The words and the phrases are there, but there's never been a difference. And that just didn't define what the department wanted to do. If you had a tributary that was going to go down under, there is no plan in place. To me, this would seem practical to have a tool like this in our pocket. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Through the chair, I think I understand what you were asking now. Yes, we do have a plan in place, and that is conservative management, as Dr. Atkinson was referring to. We restrict fisheries to bring those back right now. That's our management plan. But enhancement plans are something different, and that's what I was referring to earlier.
Thank you, Director. Are there other questions? Representative Carr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just hoping you could remind me, because I had looked back at the original bill from last year, and originally I didn't notice any changes to the language, but then looking back at it, it did start out just calling this the fisheries enhancement permit, and then all I can find is the change. I don't think any of the other language changed, maybe the number of eggs, and then the title is now rehabilitation permit. So what was the difference between the enhancement and the rehabilitation, sort of that thinking?
Through the chair, my recollection is that during a committee, the discussion about what's enhancement versus what's rehabilitation came up, and the members determined that rehabilitation is a more accurate term for what this permit would allow, and chose to change the title at that time. Rep. Tallarico could probably speak to that better than I could.
A follow-up?
Follow-up.
And I just wanted to come back to your, thank you, Madam Chair, your comment about you could already permit this type of activity. And so that's what I was trying to understand. If you say you could already permit this type of activity, could you remind me then why it would be better to specifically have the, you know, fisheries rehabilitation permit?
Yeah, through the chair, there are some constraints on who is qualified to receive an aquatic resource permit for propagative research. You're required to be a government entity or a university, and so that excludes a lot of entities.
And last question. Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know this bill will probably move on. I'll get to see it in resources again. I was not prepared today on the application fee part of it, but in that earlier testimony, I did think it seemed a valid point that there could be some on-site evaluation work necessary for determining, you know, whether this location was appropriate or that type of thing. And so I'm just thinking the permit fee seems just a little too low to seem like that is covered. But also what I liked about this bill, even in the original form, was, you know, the fact that if there, or what I was hoping to find this balance of, was if there are organizations who have some funding who can help us with some of our fisheries management at a time when we're struggling so much, you know, is there a positive way to incorporate that opportunity? But then also being mindful of some of the concerns that people have. And so I think, you know, the permit fee would kind of factor into that, just feeling a little more comfortable that the department would have the necessary resources to really evaluate. And do you have an idea of you know, where something could strike a balance, or do you think that's more a policy call on our part?
Through the chair, it's my understanding, you know, as the department looks at these things, that most of that legwork is going to be done by the applicant. They're going to have to bring us the information, since we don't have the resources to go out and do the boots on the ground pre-work that would be required. So we will certainly vet that information and do what we can, but the heavy lifting is going to be done by the applicant as part of the application process. And the fee, my understanding is the fee is just the cost of processing the permit. It won't cover the work that's required, the pre-work that would be required to get it to a point where we could review and approve a permit.
Thank you. Representative Graves Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, on the subject of the fee, I think perhaps consistent with where Representative Tarr was coming from, the $100 struck me as really low. I actually prepared an amendment to change that to 1,000, which is an arbitrary number, but simply I wanted to touch base with the sponsor first, and I didn't submit it for that reason, because I just ran out of time and bandwidth to run the trap line. But it seems like having some sort of financial skin in the game is important, instead of these permits just like flying in willy-nilly, because $100 is not much. Also, it seems inconsistent with the state's current fiscal position that the department is taking on substantial, well, I mean, you just said that, you know, the actual staff time here is going to be well in excess of what $100 or probably even $1,000 covers, that there should be sort of a pay-as-you-go or sort of user fee, I think, paradigm, especially if we're standing up new permitting processes. Just a couple of thoughts, but I'm unfortunately I failed to follow through in an amendment. But I want to ask two questions, sort of on the substance of the bill. In Dr. Atkinson's written testimony, he noted local stakeholders have identified a decline in the number of species of fish as the sort of standard or threshold, and he noted that that's very low. It seems very subjective and loosey-goosey to me too. Could you comment on your perspective on what an appropriate standard should be?
Through the chair, that's a somewhat subjective answer, I guess. I spent quite a bit of time working with representatives from the Yukon, and they are very invested in their local knowledge. And the feedback that I received from those types of stakeholders is that nobody knows better than they do what used to be there and what should be there. And they depend on their elders to tell them, you know, this stream or that slough used to have this amount of fish in it and it doesn't anymore, type thing. So that's one end of the spectrum, I guess. And the other end would be if we had a known quantity somewhere that was extirpated by some activity, that we could restore too. So there's kind of two ends to that spectrum. And my feeling, since we haven't actually gone through one of these before, but my feeling is that it's kind of a safeguard for the local people who would be affected by one of these projects, that somebody's not going to come in and put something in their backyard that they're not on board with. That's how I view that.
Thank you.
Do you have a follow-up?
No, I don't.
Thank you.
If I may,
certainly.
Through the chair, your earlier questions regarding the permit, as I stated earlier, it's just the permit processing fee, so the cost of the person who is facilitating the permit review, basically. We receive it, we process it. It doesn't really cover the cost of the pre-research that would go into actually developing the application. But what I will say is, while I understand the desire to bring in more revenue, I very much understand the desire to bring in more revenue to the department. On the other hand, we have a statute, 1605.092, that says that we shall do these things, and yet we don't have the funding for them. So this permit, in many cases, could be a vehicle for us to partner with willing entities that have the resources to restore some fisheries, some runs. And I'm thinking particularly in cases like, you know, it's been on the news quite a bit, Matsu Valley, there's been a lot of culvert work where they've put in perched culverts. It's basically extirpated portions of runs. They can't access the spawning grounds. So if you, the buskin is a good example of that. They fixed those and then brought them back. In Norton Sound, as I said earlier, those streams were mined, very small streams. They were mined turn of the century, and those salmon have never come back to them. So somebody had the money to come in and recondition that gravel and then jumpstart the runs back into there from the main stems, from those local stocks. And those are things that we as a department should be able to do, but we don't have the funding for it. So I'm reluctant to discourage a willing partner from doing that kind of beneficial work. Well, at the same time, I understand the need to protect the resource from misuse as well.
Thank you. I'm going to take a brief thank you. We'll just go a little bit. Thank you, Director Rabung. We have a few people online that would like to testify, but for the sake of time, I'm going to ask the testifiers online to keep their comments to 2 minutes. So with that, we will go to Monty Roberts from Soldotna.
Hey, thank you, Commissioner. I'm Monty Roberts from Soldotna. I'm a Kenai River fishing guide, and I'm just representing myself today. I do agree with the earlier testimonies on both sides for the most part. My biggest concern is when you start to enhance or introduce not naturally spawned fish, a lot of bad things can happen. And I would just really want to be cautious on what constitutes a need to restore a fishery, not just overfishing, because the overfishing, if we license ourselves to go back in and restore them, then they're not as concerned about fishing them to next to extinction. So that's my concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions? Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Next we have Dan Dunaway in Dillingham. Mr. Dunaway, if you could identify yourself for the record, please. Mr. Dunaway? We'll try him in a couple minutes. Let's go to Nancy Hillstrand from Seldovia.
B-199. I oppose House Bill 199 as a fish culture.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Pardon me. My name is Nancy Hillstrand, and I'm with Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. I now am a seafood processor, but I was a fish culturist for 21 years with experience with ADF&G's Fred Division with all five species of salmon and two of trout. And I oppose House Bill 199 because I feel that this has a very real risk to the wild stocks. I did see in my 21 years of experience the mishaps and mishandlings of small wild salmon broodstock. They can be mishandled, the genetics can be messed up, and there's just a lot of problems with this House Bill 199. Fish and Game does not have a Fred Division anymore, and so there really isn't a basic oversight division that they had in the early 90s or the early 70s and 80s. And I think at this point, if we can change this into just devoted to natural spawning habitat and the culvert problem we have in Alaska, I think we'd be farther ahead. The Fish and Game has a lot of information on this, and I have attached this into an email to all of you. There's an inventory that they've done, and there's places all over the state of Alaska that have thousands of culverts that are blocking natural production of salmon up into the streams. And so the first thing we should do before we allow something like HB 199 is we should address these culverts. And like what Sam Rabung just said, the culvert there in Kodiak, that was productive. There's the Susitna. I know the Habitat Partnership has worked on those. They still have at least 70 okay. or 100 more. Okay. So if you can please look at my comments, I would appreciate that. Okay. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you. And thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we will go to Sam Snyder from Anchorage. Mr. Snyder.
Hello.
Yes.
Great. My name is Sam Snyder. I'm located in Anchorage. I'm testifying on behalf of myself. We've been in Alaska over a little over a decade. My wife and I raised our two boys in many ways around a love of salmon, trout, and rivers. Fish are in part what brought us to Alaska, and in many ways they're what keep us here. I have a PhD in environmental studies with a heavy focus on fisheries, and I've spent a good bit of my graduate and professional career studying the history of fisheries in America, and I've published extensively on the matter. I don't need to repeat the comments or testimony by folks like Milo Adkinson or Dan Dunaway, who have long respected proven track records of fisheries work in the state. But when I read bills like HB 199, I'm struck by this massive sense of deja vu, and it's not a good way. I feel like we're turning back the clock 120-plus years. At the turn of the 1800s and the discovery of hatchery technology, Americans and individuals took matters into their own hands. They set up individual hatchery programs and started hatcheries with no understanding of the local ecosystems and the impact that spreading fish could have. Long story short, what started with good intentions to restore, as Raybung noted, restore dwindling local regional fish stocks, turned into a widespread self-driven bucket brigade putting fish where they shouldn't be. And that well-intended effort backfired, putting already weakened fisheries at further risk and also jeopardizing other fish and aquatic ecosystems. So on top of development-related impacts, we have in a sense been cleaning up some of those messes around the country for 100-plus years. Alaska has a proven track record and a progressive, careful approach to hatchery development in state waters. Why would we jeopardize this trajectory and good work? Commissioner Raybung just noted that the current scheme restricts who can get those permits to government and agency actions. This is how it should be. Allowing any individual to establish a hatchery is counterintuitive to any reasonable fisheries management program. Even with good oversight, this sets up a slippery slope that quickly slides away from science-based management. Our strong policy up to this point has established Alaska as the place that it is. We don't need to repeat the mistakes of the Pacific Northwest or the lower 48. HB 199 departs from Alaska's current policy. It sets up a scheme that mirrors some of these other failures. We need to stop repeating them. We have plenty of experience in fish management and fish restoration in this state, and we need to continue to work on those. Focus on habitat, culverts, restoration projects, not allowing Alaskans, individuals, small private operations to set up hatchery programs at will with little oversight and little cost that would have a greater cost to the state in the long run. This is not the approach we should take, and I urge the Fisheries Committee to oppose this bill outright. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Snyder. And with that, I see no others online that would like to testify. Is there anyone else in the room? Mr. Dunaway?
Yes, Madam Chair, can you hear me now?
We can hear you now. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you very much. I guess there was a phone line problem. I'm Dan Dunaway. I live in Dillingham. I am speaking for myself. I'm retired from about 22 years with the Department of Fish and Game. I retired as the area biologist for Bristol Bay area for the sport fisheries. I think I was in a class in Juneau earlier and heard Mr. Tallarico extol the virtues of this bill, but I think it's a poor idea. Number one, I don't think it's really needed, except for some of those places like Mr. Rayburn brought up. The potential for disease disruption, genetic dilution, and so on, and misuse are just too high. The department these days, as other people have noted, don't have the staff, funding, or time to monitor this. And from my own experience here in the Bay, there's people who are far too willing to take things into their own hands, and they still don't understand the potential impacts. And I really think we should work within the guidelines and programs that the department already has. I was unaware of some of the things that Mr. Raybung covered, but I think it's an excellent approach. And I just don't think this hatchery box idea needs to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, Mr. Dunaway, thank you for your testimony. Now I see no one else online. And is there anyone else here that would like to testify? And with that, I will close public testimony. And I would like to consider any amendments. Representative Vance, may I have a motion, please?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number one.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion. And before we go any further on this amendment, again, I'd like to mention we have Director Raybung here that might answer any questions that might need to be answered. And if you could tell us about your amendment, Representative Vance.
So this amendment is giving the commissioner more discretion in oversight on the permit. And if the permittee simply states if the permittee violates a section and any regulation adopted under the section or condition of the permit issued under the section, the commissioner may, after providing the permittee, notice a hearing, suspend, or revoke a permit issued under this section. And I think that this amendment may address many of the concerns that we've heard in public testimony about the oversight that the department has. And this in fact gives the commissioner that oversight so that the permits that are issued can come in line with what the department is already doing when it comes to rehabilitation projects.
Thank you. Are there questions? And I'm going to take a brief at ease for a moment. Record. Do I hear any objections? I will remove my objection. Are there any other objections? Seeing none, this amendment passes. Thank you, Representative Vance. And with that, I would like to know if there are any further comments from the sponsor of this bill.
Very briefly, Madam Chair, I do appreciate you taking the time and the committee taking the time. I know that you've got a very heavy schedule, so it's very much appreciated. Thank you.
Our pleasure, I'm sure.
I do have one last quick question for Director Raybung.
Director Raybung?
I actually do.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to belabor the question anymore, but perhaps it can set up the conversation for the next committee. But in the permit application fee, do you feel that if it were to be raised to say $500 or $1,000 as what was thrown out there, do you feel it would inhibit good prospects from applying?
Through the chair, I'm certain there are some good prospects who might feel otherwise, but my feeling is they're going to need to have the wherewithal to do the project from start to finish, and setting the bar higher as for a fee to apply kind of gets that point across, I guess. I imagine it would create a hardship for well-meaning people that didn't have the means. But from our perspective, we would hope that whoever is applying for one of these has the means to follow through beginning, middle, and end of a project. So that shouldn't be a barrier to somebody who has those resources.
Okay. An additional question?
Yes.
Yes.
We're running short on time.
Just for the purpose of the record, to clarify, do you feel that this bill, with the amendment included, would create, would be an at-will or a little oversight into the real rehabilitation as far as the state's management is concerned?
Through the chair, not at all. We're not going to let anything go through that we're not comfortable that is not going to create harm. Okay, first, do no harm is kind of our mantra. And we will scrutinize any of these permits just like we would any other. And as I said, we do issue these sort of permits now. And they go through a rigorous review, and they have evaluation requirements. And I don't see any of that changing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I've been trying to sort of, as I come to my own position on this and listening to the concerns, I guess I'm just thinking, you know, I have some faith in the department to have a high level of scrutiny about these. But based on some of the comments, what I'm thinking is there may be an opportunity to adjust just the definition so it wouldn't be so broad in terms of who could qualify for the permit. And when I look at all the letters of support, they seem to be tribal interests, really. And for me, I guess it's just hard to think of, you know, not trying to do something that allows the people who have lived on this land for 10,000 years to be more involved in the fisheries management. But can you see, for example, if we change that, and this is just a preview of what I might be thinking if it comes to resources, if we tighten that up a little bit, sort of as like the put your toe in the water next step forward to be more just tribal or native corporation, because the one you have now is over only government or university, right? So this would sort of like add another category as a first step. Then some of the concerns that people have about this, you know, unqualified individuals or others participating could be addressed, and it would give the opportunity to, you know, sort of phase into a new kind of permittee. And I just don't know, because the letters of support, like I say, are all from what appear to be tribal interests, that if we would expect any applicants beyond that, that seems to be who's really interested in this bill.
Through the chair, I feel like that's a policy call, and we will process permits regardless of who the applicant is, if they're qualified to apply per the statute or the regulations. If you put provisions in the statute that gave guidance to that, then we would adhere to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, knowing that this bill has a further referral to resources and will be, more fully vetted in resources once again, if it is at the will of this committee, I would like to move this bill from committee. And hearing no objections, Representative Vance.
Madam Chair, I move to report HB 199 LS0169-M out of committee as amended, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And hearing no objections, HB 199 is moved from this committee. And with that, I want to thank all the members. I also want to apologize to Marilyn Charles and John Wood. Marilyn Charles is our Fisherman's Fund Advisory Board applicant, and John Wood is the applicant for the Board of Fisheries. We will take up their issues on March 3rd, which is Tuesday, at our next meeting. And seeing no further business to come before this committee, again, I want to thank the committee for staying a little bit late so we could address this situation. And with that, we're adjourned.